Cherry Hill Volvo, we have absolutely incredible offers and a plethora of both new and certified Volvos from which to choose. We are eager to offer amazingly competitive prices, plus an additional $1,000 Costco discount on all new Cherry Hill Volvos. When leasing or purchasing a new or certified Cherry Hill Volvo, you become a valued part of our team. Join Cherry Hill Volvo for the pricing and attention you deserve. I am Judith Krupnik, president of Cherry Hill Volvo.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Baseball season is heating up. Odyssey has you covered with the most entertaining coverage of your team. Stay locked in and in the know with the local voices you trust as they bring you unfiltered takes, recap games, react to the latest team news, and talk to callers. Listen to your favorite shows for free on the Odyssey app, odyssey.com, your smart speaker, or in the car with Android Auto or Apple CarPlay.
I want to just welcome to the show Dr. Victoria Coates. She, of course, is President Donald Trump's former Deputy National Security Advisor, and she is the current Vice President of the Davis Institute for National Security and Foreign Policy at the Heritage Foundation, Philadelphia's own. Hello, Dr. Coates, and thanks for joining me at 5 o'clock.
Hi, Rich. Well, thanks for having me on. We had an eventful weekend, so lots to discuss.
We certainly did. Now, what do you make, first of all, of the story that was in the Jerusalem Post of the United States vis-a-vis Turkey, knowing what Iran was going to do and kind of signing off on this and going from there?
Yeah, there was a lot of sort of choreography that went on before the event where the Turks were informed, some of Iran's Gulf neighbors were informed, apparently. The Iranians, with whom the administration has been playing post office, they've been sending each other notes, communicated through the government of Oman that this would happen. The Israelis seemed pretty clear it was going to happen, and they moved assets and, you know, got themselves ready, had their air force aloft. So I think that was definitely the case, which shows you the Iranians were not going for a mass casualty event, and that is good. And I've heard a lot of folks say, well, they don't really want to escalate. This was just symbolic. So as President Biden said to Prime Minister Netanyahu, the Israelis can just take the win here and really don't need to do anything else. But I think that would actually be a potentially catastrophic mistake, because what the Iranians did do in terms of launching 300 projectiles, including 100 ballistic missiles at Israel proper from Iran proper, is a game changer. And if that is allowed to just pass, that's okay. That's now acceptable. That's status quo. And while Israel will hopefully shoot them all down, well, then Israel needs to be right 100% of the time, and they just need to get lucky once. And there's no doubt in my mind that they'll try this again.
Now, Israel is saying it's going to respond. What do you think happens from here? I mean, where do we go from here? If Israel does respond, what happens with Russia? What happens with China? And where could this go?
Well, if I were advising the Israelis, I would also advise them to avoid a mass casualty episode, which could lead to, you know, uncontrollable escalation, but that they need to demonstrate they have a capacity that the Iranians don't have. So they need a successful strike on a major target. Now, that doesn't have to be, as I said, a civilian population center. That's much more the style of Hamas and Iran's proxies. But if they went after a military installation, an oil facility, the way the Iranians did after the Saudi refinery in Abqaiq in 2019, and really inflicted some damage that cost the Iranians an important capacity, I think that would be the appropriate response. So the Iranians will pay a price that the Israelis did not pay, but it was not, you know, a World War III style starting activity. So if you do that and you say to the Iranians, this is, you don't do that again, And, you know, you've got to get them to stop and not tell them they're going to get a hall pass for this.
And didn't Reagan do something similar to that by going after oil fields or something?
Yeah, it was really more maritime assets. It was Operation Praying Mantis, and I believe 1986. And what had happened is the Iranians had mined the Straits of Hormuz to prevent energy from getting in and out. And, you know, the reality was in 1986, we had to have that oil. We were importing a lot of it at that time. And also, it's obviously 40% of the world's energy supply. So markets were going to be in terrible disruption. And Reagan went in and took some very strong actions against the Iranian Navy, and they backed down. And the oil flowed. We're in a very different position right now. It still would be a bad thing to close the strait. But, you know, at the same time, you could argue it would be good for business. But the lesson from that is that you need to be strong with them in a way that they are clear they are going to take consequences. And otherwise, they just keep going.
Now, I know you're going to be on Fox Business after you conclude this interview with me. So, I mean, thank you for making time for it. You also have an op-ed over at FoxNews.com, and you say you wrote this along with Congressman Chip Roy. Biden's moral equivalency between Israel and the Palestinians will result in failure again. The House passed funding for Israel, and senators must demand it be approved to show our support. Now, I heard Senator Rand Paul say earlier today that this is the kind of thing, I mean, Israel will pay us back. It's not like we have to worry about not having the money for this. This is one of those things where, you know, he could be for it because even though he doesn't like foreign aid generally, this is a thing where Israel will eventually pay us back. But you have a lot of people in the Democrat Party. Oh, sorry. Were you going to say something on that?
No. Go, I hear the rest of your thought.
I was just going to say, but there's are a lot of people in the Democrat Party that like Bernie Sanders, I mean, standing up there and saying not another dime for Israel.
Right. And that's where you're seeing the actual very clear divide between the progressives and the normal people in the Senate, which, you know, Senator Paul is obviously a rational human being. And I think when he sees this is an emergency. He knows that part of the reason this cash infusion is necessary for Israel in dollars right now is that to keep their sort of stream of munitions flowing, they have to. This is one of the problems with our defense industrial base. We can get into it another day. With Taiwan was telling us about it when we were there in February. They have to prime the pump with so much cash up front. And then they have to carry the costs of that cash for the however long it's going to take the producing entity to fulfill their order. That's the way the system's rigged right now. So the Israelis need this cash so that they can pay, you know, say Raytheon for David Sling and Arrow 2 and 3 interceptors up front so that those will be flowing to them in September, October if they need to have them. So this is not an irrational request. It's a reasonable amount, $14.3 billion. It will be spent here, which is good. I wish it didn't have to be spent at all, but if it does, it's good to have it spent here. And as you say, the Israelis will make every effort to pay us back. They also will cooperate with us extensively on intelligence and other operations. So there are other means they have to make good on that. And it's really encouraging to hear Senator Paul say that.
Now, in your piece with Congressman Chip Roy, you also talk about, first of all, gone is the condemnation of Hamas's barbaric attacks on October 7th as terrorist outrages against humanity, a condemnation that apparently prompted Russia and China to veto the Biden version. And this 2728 resolution calls for the release of the hostages, but it removes language making any ceasefire contingent on their release. Now, where does all that stand with this UN Security Council resolution and the hostages? Because we don't hear a lot about the hostages right now as Joe Biden's claiming to stand with Israel.
Right. And that's actually where Chip and I started with this op-ed is, you know, when 3 weeks ago the United States abstained on 2728. So we didn't stop it from going through the United Nations Security Council. And there are lots of examples. Well, three, notably, one going back to Condoleezza Rice and the Bush administration when she abstained on 1860. I could get these all confused. At the end in 2009, I think she was hoping to deliver a peace deal for President Bush at the tail end of his tenure. So she let that go through. Terrible precedent. And an abstention at the United Nations, given its makeup, is exactly the same as an affirmative vote. They try to use it as cover. It's not. The Obama administration did it with 2334, which is a condemnation of settlements. And in a new twist, the Biden folk actually offered their own version of 2728. But they, as you said, linked, you have to get the hostages out before we'll talk about a ceasefire. And the Russians and the Chinese vetoed that. And they vetoed it because it also condemned Hamas for being terrorists. So all that came out. And so by abstaining on 2728, the Biden administration opened the door for Hamas to keep the hostages and to get a ceasefire. Mm-hmm. The first time that's been on the table for them. So how that isn't in legitimizing of their October 7th tactics, I don't see how it can't be. But that's what they did materially to Israel just 3 weeks ago. And so they can wrap themselves in the Israeli flag now and talk about how strong they were over the weekend, but that's not consistent with their actions.
And Dr. Victoria Coates, is that part of the reason why you think people like, I mean, John Fetterman, Senator John Fetterman, coming out and saying he's breaking with the Biden administration here, he wants to stand with Israel?
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Baseball season is heating up. Odyssey has you covered with the most entertaining coverage of your team. Stay locked in and in the know with the local voices you trust as they bring you unfiltered takes, recap games, react to the latest team news, and talk to callers. Listen to your favorite shows for free on the Odyssey app, odyssey.com, your smart speaker, or in the car with Android Auto or Apple CarPlay.
Now, Rich, you might need to send the medics for me, but I agree with everything Senator Fetterman has said about Israel in recent months. He has been terrific on Twitter. I saw both Senator Cruz and Congressman Roy retweeted when he rebutted the New York Times op-ed about having conditions on aid to Israel, saying no conditions. That is a great thing for him to say. Now, I need Senator Fetterman and maybe Senator Jackie Rosen from Nevada, who purports to be a great supporter of Israel. They need to go and pressure Chuck Schumer to bring the legislation they have on the floor in the Senate. They've had it since November, and they could demand that the Senate Majority Leader bring that up for a vote and vote for it. Now, one of the things Congressman Roy allowed for in this op-ed, which was a concession for him, I mean, he had the crazy thought in November that since it was a manageable amount, we should actually pay for it and not just have it be more debt for our kids and grandkids. But I think given the crisis, given what happened over the weekend, he's come to the conclusion that, you know, this is actually an emergency. Right. Unlike the border, unlike Ukraine, this is an emergency. Let's get this done. So he's willing to concede that point to get this vote. And, you know, we get crickets from the Senate Majority Leader.
Speaking of the Senate Majority Leader, Dr. Victoria Coates, have you ever heard a situation where the House sends impeachment articles and the Senate says we may or may not have a trial? I'm pretty sure the Constitution says House impeaches, Senate does the trial. I don't think there's an asterisk there that says if they feel like it.
There is not. And so, you know, as the articles arrive today for Secretary, they've got to take it up. You know, one of my chief lieutenants at the Davis Institute is a woman named Laura Reese, who's just been a warrior on this issue and working closely with the House, getting those articles of impeachment together. And they have to take it up. I mean, yes, they have the majority, so they're not going to get, you know, unless somebody comes to their senses. And again, Senator Fetterman has been saying some interesting things about the border. So maybe he will have a flash of reason here. But unless, you know, some Democrats were willing to vote for it, we're not going to get there. But they have to have to try. I mean, they have to do it. As you said, it's in the Constitution.
By the way, John Fetterman, you know what happened is his body double just took over, like in the movie Dave.
I guess.
That's why you're agreeing with him so much.
Well, that could be, but as I said, always with the caveat that I need a vote.
Right.
Any vote. Any material action.
Right. Something concrete. Let's think about now. We're looking at a situation here where this standalone bill on Israeli aid, the Democrats are saying, no, we refuse to do this. We're not going to give you a standalone aid package for Israel. It has to be lumped in together. You and Congressman Chip Roy point out in your piece over at FoxNews.com, you said, last year, a standalone paid-for request for emergency funds for Israel passed the House of Representatives. Similar legislation could be passed again Monday, today, Tuesday. Pro-Israel senators on both sides of the aisle should then insist to be taken up and passed immediately to demonstrate that American support for Israel is indeed ironclad. But I'm already hearing now the cries by saying, but if you don't do Ukraine at the same time, then this sends a message to Russia that they can keep going into and pound Ukraine. And I think people are just saying we just have to separate these two things for the purposes of that. But the White House seems to be drawing, to use the term, a red line in that.
Right. And I mean, these things are now apples and oranges. Ukraine's been going on for more than 2 years, and we have given north of $110 billion. Nobody actually knows the number, Rich. And this is what's so just egregious about this. The administration, after doing the accounting trick with the Pentagon to the tune of, I think, some $3 to $5 billion last summer, where, oh my gosh, we misvalued the weapons. So we just found another $3 to $5 billion in the sofa. Another $14 billion just shook out of additional expenses that just hadn't been accounted for. So the number may now be well over $120 billion that American taxpayers have generously shared with Ukraine over this 2+ years. This emergency supplemental for Israel would be the first time that we would be allocating these kinds of funds, you know, 6 months into their crisis. So it's not as if we haven't been giving to Ukraine. And the other thing that's been revealed this week is our friends in France, led by Emmanuel Macron, who likes to talk tough on Ukraine. And, you know, his national security advisor said to me at one point this fall, this is a crisis of American leadership. If you guys don't do this, you know, your leadership is in question. Well, guess what was reported in Politico this week? They have made their largest purchases of Russian oil this year since the war. They've gone up exponentially this year, buying all the cheap Russian product, keeping Putin in business. That's how much they actually care about Ukraine. So, you know, the thought that then this is an emergency that is beholden on the American people to take on more debt for, while France keeps their economy afloat, keeps their contribution de minimis, and does not make its 2% of GDP for defense spending under its NATO obligations. You know, that's a situation that can't go on. And I'm sorry if I don't feel the same urgency about Ukraine that I do about Israel, as much as I don't like Putin and I don't want him to keep doing this, but I can't stop it unilaterally.
Yeah. No, look, I think you're exactly right about that. I think a lot of people feel that way, no question about it. Dr. Victoria Coates is with me, former National Security Advisor to President Donald Trump. What do you make of yesterday, that A-15 day of action where all these lunatics are shutting down roadways and bridges? They were trying to shut down 95 in Philadelphia. Some people got arrested by 30th Street Station, City Hall. But what really was the epicenter of it was them shutting down the Golden Gate Bridge, shutting down the Brooklyn Bridge. Do you think anything will happen to all of these brave, brave protesters? And by the way, where is it in the First Amendment that says you have the right to shut down major arterways and disrupt commerce? Because I don't remember seeing that in there.
No, it was just obscene. And don't forget Chicago. They had all those poor people trying to get to O'Hare.
Oh, that's right.
And,
the airport,
you know, get on their flights, dragging their luggage along the side of the road. You think about people trying to, you know, get to pick up their kids, all the things we take for granted. And sure, there could be an act of God like the Key Bridge in Maryland, you know, and one does what one has to do, but not an act of man, not a voluntary act. And I mean, where were the police in all of this? Is this acceptable behavior to them? It makes me think, and this goes more to my idiosyncrasies, but of the guards at the museums when the eco-terrorists are attacking the works of art, and the guards stand back. They won't let people intervene. They like that policy. They've been given instructions. Is that the case with the police in these obviously very liberal jurisdictions? That no, these, it's okay, don't disrupt this. This is legitimate behavior. And think about what it's costing people. It's just, it's egregious. And, you know, the fact that they're, you know, they are allowed to burn the American flag, you know, that's what Scalia said in one of his judgments, that is an acceptable form of speech as much as he hated it. They're allowed to chant death to America, but we don't have to like it. We don't have to encourage it. So there is apparently almost no coverage of this on the major networks. Surprise, surprise. But if this continues, it's going to start to get much more local attention. And, you know, the people are going to really start to notice.
I hate that. I mean, I don't care. Even if I agree with your cause, if you make me late, I hate you. And Scott Pressler had a great point. He said Republicans should take out registration forms and go to every single driver who's stuck in traffic because of these idiots and get them to register as Republicans. I know they don't care about winning hearts and minds. It's not what these spoiled little brats are doing. They're trying to disrupt capitalism. They're trying to shut it down. But man, I mean, there's nothing that irritates people more than sitting in traffic when they have to go get their kids or catch a flight or go to a doctor's appointment or just go home after a long day at work. And it's the most infuriating thing. And I love how in Miami they try to do this. They got arrested immediately. Ron DeSantis says, you know, we don't play that game here. OK, you're not doing that here.
No. And the sky didn't fall and they didn't go on a shooting rampage or anything like that. So I think Governor DeSantis did absolutely 100% the right thing, which is say there's zero tolerance for this nonsense. It is, you know, not covered under your First Amendment rights. I would liken it to saying, you know, screaming fire in a movie house. If there is no fire, you're taking an unreasonable action. And so I think within that context, you know, that there has to be a growing silent majority in the United States who, even if they don't want to say publicly for whatever reason, you know, you're an Arab American. Everybody's saying how much they love the Palestinians and all of this. You don't want to say it publicly, but you've got to be looking at this and saying, you know, I've got a business and my customers couldn't get to my business this afternoon. You know, they couldn't make their appointments. They couldn't pick up whatever it was. So I didn't get paid. And at what point is the Palestinian cause not worth it?
All right. Now, I have to ask you last question before I let you go on Fox Business. And it's something we talked about.
Oh, that actually got pushed to next week because we couldn't get a good signal here.
Oh, OK. No problem. And the question is this, Dr. Victoria Coates, you were the Deputy National Security Advisor of the president. You also were very high up in the Energy Department. You're the vice president of foreign policy of the Davis Foundation at the Heritage Foundation. But are you also a survivor of glaring? Have you ever been glared at before?
Well, you know, looks can be violent.
Yes. Yes.
You know, and you, it can be a kind of visual assault.
Yeah.
And so, you know, glaring, you know, we can't take this too seriously.
Right.
And, you know, the glare is in the eye of the receiver.
Mm-hmm.
So you might just be, I might be thinking about a difficult topic and happen to look at you. But I have to police myself better than that.
Yeah.
I need to realize that might make somebody feel uncomfortable.
the trauma that Maggie Haberman experienced in court yesterday. And we have the audio here, Dr. Coates, if we could. And we're setting up a group called Glare, which is we're going to try to do like a survivors group to get through this. And she and Caitlin Collins will hopefully speak before the group at some point. But here, take a listen.
You were actually in the room for that. At one point, the pool said that he was glaring at you for several seconds. You had reported shortly before that during a break that he appeared to be falling asleep at one point as the proceedings were getting kind of tedious. Did you notice that?
Mm-hmm. I mean, yes, I noticed it. He made a pretty specific stare at me and walked out of the room.
I've been on the receiving end of said glares.
I know you have.
She knows because they're in therapy together. Dr. Victoria Coates, I've been glaring at Matt DeSantis all afternoon and Henry.
to try to break them down.
Yeah. Listen, my friend, thank you very much. I appreciate your time. I know we're going to be talking a lot later, probably this week. So all my best to you. You're in high demand. So thanks for making the time.
Thank you very much. Take care, guys.
All right.
All-star closer Kenley Jansen, we have a question.
What's the best podcast of all time?
Baseball isn't boring, baby.
I'm Rob Bradford, and every single day I'm sitting down with the biggest names to show you this great game is the greatest game. It's my podcast. It's my passion. It's a cause I started more than 2 years ago and is now the most prolific national daily baseball pod there is. Another fact, so jump aboard the BIB Express. Follow and listen to Baseball Isn't Boring, presented by Wasabi Hot Cloud Storage on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.